All right, we're continuing chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And do you remember where we were?
Yeah, Harry and Ron had just headed out to go to the Quidditch field to practice.
Ah, yes. Harry glanced over to his right as they approached the Quidditch pitch, to where the trees of the Forbidden Forest were swaying darkly. Nothing flew out of them, the sky was empty, but for a few distant owls fluttering in the owlery tower. He had enough to worry about. The flying horse wasn't doing him any harm. He pushed it out of his mind. They collected balls from the cupboard in the changing room and set to work, Ron guarding the three tall goalposts, Harry playing chaser and trying to get the quaffle past Ron. Harry thought Ron was pretty good. He blocked three-quarters of the goals Harry attempted to put past him, and played better the longer they practiced. After a couple hours, they returned to the school, where they ate lunch, during which Hermione made it clear that she thought they were irresponsible. Then they returned to the Quidditch pitch for a real training session. All of their teammates but Angelina were already in the changing room when they entered. "All right, Ron," said George, winking at him. "Yeah," said Ron, who had become quieter and quieter all the way down to the pitch. "Ready to show us all up, Ickle Prefect?" said Fred, emerging tussle-haired from the neck of his Quidditch robes, a slightly malicious grin on his face. "Shut up," said Ron, stony-faced, pulling his own team robes for the first time. They fitted him well, considering they had been Oliver Woods, who was rather broader. Broader in the shoulder. "Okay, everyone," said Angelina, entering from the captain's office, already changed. "Let's get to it. Alicia and Fred, if you can just bring the ball crate out for us. Oh, and there are a couple of people out there watching, but I want you to just ignore them, okay?" Something in her would-be casual voice made Harry think he might know something about who the unintended spectators were.
The Slytherins.
Oh, really?
I bet.
But sure enough, when they left the changing room for the bright sunlight of the pitch, it was to the storm of catcalls and jeers from the Slytherin Quidditch team and assorted hangers-on, who were grouped halfway up the empty stands and whose voices were echoing loudly around the stadium. "What's that Weasley's writing?" Malfoy called in his sneering drawl. "Why would anyone put a flying charm on a moldy old log like that?" Crab Goyle and Pansy Parkinson guffawed and shrieked with laughter. "I'll bet Pansy slept with everyone in Slytherin."
Yeah.
Ron mounted his broom and kicked off from the ground, and Harry followed him, watching his ears turn red from behind. "Ignore them," he said, accelerating to catch up with Ron. "We'll see who's laughing after we play them." "Exactly the attitude I want, Harry," said Angelina, soaring over them with the quaffle under her arm and slowing to a hover on the spot in front of her airborne team. "Okay, everyone. We're going to start with some passes to warm up. The whole team, please." "Hey, Johnson, what's with that hairstyle anyway?" shrieked Pansy from below. "Why would anyone want to look like they've got worms coming out of their head?" Angelina swept her long braided hair out of her face and said calmly, "Spread out then. Let's see what we can do. I'll bet Angelina's hot."
Yeah.
She seems like she'd be hot, right?
She's totally hot. Because the twins date her, or somebody dates her, that's like...
Both twins.
One of them. I don't know. Whatever. She's probably hot.
You think the twins want to date someone together, don't you?
You said that before.
Did I say that? No.
We're not going there.
Do they double team someone?
Oh my god! Seriously, Jesse? I said we're not going there. Come on.
Okay. Harry reversed, away from the others, to the far side of the pitch. Ron fell back toward the opposite goal. Angelina raised the quaffle with one hand and threw it hard toward Fred, who passed it to George, who passed it to Harry, who passed it to Ron, who dropped it. The Slytherins, led by Malfoy, roared and screamed with laughter. Ron, who had pelted to the ground to catch the quaffle before it landed, pulled out of the dive untidily so that he slipped sideways on his broom and returned to playing height. Blushing, Harry saw Fred and George exchange looks. " but uncharacteristically neither of them said anything, for which he was grateful. "Pass it on, Ron," called Angelina as though nothing had happened. Ron threw the quaffle to Alicia, who passed it to Harry, passed it to George. "Hey, Potter, how's your scar feeling?" said Malfoy. "She don't need a lie down. It must be, what, a whole week since you were in the hospital wing. That's a record for you, isn't it?" Fred passed it to Angelina. She reversed passed it to Harry, who had not been expecting it, but caught it in the very tips of his fingers and passed it to Ron, who lunged for it and missed by inches. "Come on now, Ron," said Angelina crossly, as Ron dived for the ground again, chasing the quaffle. "Pay attention." It would have been hard to say whether Ron's face or the quaffle was a deeper scarlet when he returned to playing height. Malfoy and the rest of the Slytherin team were howling with laughter. On his third attempt, Ron caught the quaffle. Perhaps out of relief, he passed it on so enthusiastically, his sword straight through Katie's outstretched hands and hit her in the face. "Sorry," Ron groaned, zooming forward to see whether he had done any damage. "Get in back in position. She's fine," barked Angelina. "But you're passing to a teammate. Do not try to knock her off the broom, won't you? We've got bludgers for that." Katie's nose was bleeding. Down below, the Slytherins were stamping their feet and jeering. Fred and George converged on Katie. "See, I'll bet Katie's the one that
Okay, fine.
"Here, take this," Fred told her, handing her something small and purple from out of his pocket. "It'll clear up in no time." "All right," called Angelina. "Fred, George, go get your bats and a bludger. We'll get up to the goalposts."
Uh-oh, wait, I think they gave her the wrong thing.
Do you think so?
Yeah, let's read on.
"Harry, release the snitch when I say so. We're going to aim for Ron's goal, obviously." Harry zoomed off after the twins to fetch the snitch.
Oh, it's hard to read when you're drunk.
Yeah. You're doing good, though.
"Ron's making a right pig's ear of things, isn't he?" murmured George as the three of them landed the crate containing the balls and opened it to extract one of the bludgers and the snitch. "He's just nervous," said Harry. "He was fine when I was practicing with him this morning." "Yeah, well, I hope he hasn't peaked too soon," said Fred gloomily. They returned to the air. When Angelina blew her whistle, Harry released the snitch, and Fred and George let the bludger fly. From that moment on, Harry was barely aware what the others were doing. It was his job to recapture the fluttering golden ball that was worth 150 points to the Seekers team, and doing so required enormous speed and skill. It's weird that he's doing, like...
A lot of commentary.
I'm just saying, you know. He accelerated, rolling and swerving in and out of the chasers, the warm autumn air whipping his face, and the distant yells... And the distant yells of the Slytherins, so much meaningless roaring in his ears. But too soon, the whistle brought him to a halt again. "Stop, stop, stop!" screamed Angelina. "Ron, you're not covering your middle post." Ron hovered and looked at Ron. Harry hovered and looked at Ron, who was covering in front of the left-hand hoop, leaving the other two completely unprotected. "Oh, sorry. You keep shifting while you're watching the chasers," said Angelina. "Either stay in center position until you have to move to defend a hoop, or else circle the hoops. But don't drift vaguely onto one side. That's how you let in the last three goals." "Sorry," Ron repeated, his red face shining like a beacon against the bright blue sky. "And Katie, can't you do something about that nosebleed?" "It's just getting worse," Katie said thickly, attempting to stem the flow with her sleeve. Harry glanced around at Fred, who was looking anxious and examining his pockets. He saw Fred pull out something purple, examine it for a second, and looked around at Katie, evidently horror-struck. "Let's try it again," said Angelina. She was ignoring the Slytherins, who had now set up a chant of, "Gryffindor are our losers, Gryffindor are our losers." But certainly there was a rigidity about her seat, on the broom, nevertheless. This time they'd been flying for barely 3 minutes when Angelina's whistle sounded. Harry, who just sighted the snitch encircling the opposite goalpost, pulled up, feeling distinctly aggrieved. "What now?" he said impatiently to Alicia, who was nearest. "Katie," she said shortly. Harry turned and saw Angelina, Fred, and George all flying fast as they could toward Katie. Alicia and Harry sped toward her, too. It was plain now that Angelina had stopped training just in time. Katie was now chalk-white and covered in blood. "She needs the hospital wing," said Angelina. "We'll take her," said Fred. "She, might have swallowed a blood blister pod by mistake." "Well, there's no point in continuing with no beaters and the chaser gone," said Angelina glumly as Fred and George zoomed off toward the castle, supporting Katie between them. "Come on, let's go get changed. Don't they have enough to practice?"
"Yeah.
Most teams have at least twice as many players on the team as they need to play.
It's a small school."
"Not that small school."
"That's right.
You don't like my commentary." "My commentary is very sexy, I have to say."
"I'm too sexy for your commentary."
"I know.
Too sexy for your commentary."
"My commentary works out."
"That's cute."
The Slytherins continued to chant as they trailed back into the changing room. Man, the Slytherins must be so bored.
"I know."
"How is practice?" asked Hermione rather coolly, half an hour later, as Harry and Ron climbed through the portrait hole in the Gryffindor common room. "It was," Harry began. "Completely lousy," said Ron in a hollow voice, sinking into a chair beside Hermione. She looked up at Ron, and her frostiness seemed to melt.
"Mm.
Yeah, she likes him, doesn't she?" "Well, it was only your first one," she said consolingly. "It's bound to take time to." "Who said it was me that made it lousy?" snapped Ron. "No one," said Hermione, taken aback. "I thought..." "You thought I was bound to be rubbish." "No, of course I didn't. Look, you said it was lousy, and I just..." "I'm going to get started on some homework," said Ron angrily, and stomped off to the staircase to the boys' dormitory, vanished from sight. Hermione turned toward Harry. "Was he lousy?" "No," said Harry loyally. Hermione raised her eyebrows. "Well, I suppose he could have played better," said Harry. "But it was only the first training session, like you said." Neither Harry nor Ron seemed to make much headway with their homework that night. Harry knew Ron was too preoccupied with how badly he'd performed at Quidditch practice. He himself was having difficulty getting the chant of "Gryffindor are losers" out of his head. They spent the whole of Sunday in the common room, buried under their books, while the room of them around them filled up and then emptied. It was another clear, fine day, and most of their fellow Gryffindors spent the day outside on the grounds, enjoying what might well be some of the last sunshine of the year. By the evening, Harry felt as though someone had been beating his brain against the inside of his skull.
Mm-hmm.
She writes like she's writing for kids who hate homework. You know?
Well, she is. Keep reading.
Okay.
And kittens who hate homework.
And kittens. Do you hate homework, kitten?
Yes.
Let me throw a kitten.
Some homework. Some homework is fun.
You should take my arm. Yeah. Now, can you hold me?
Yeah.
Do you like holding me?
Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah, Theo, sweet kitten. You know, we probably should try and get more homework done during the week, Harry muttered to Ron. Oh, you think? As they finally laid aside McGonagall's long essay on the inanimatus conjurus spell, they and turned in miserably to Professor Sinastra's equally long and difficult essay about Jupiter's moons. Yeah, said Ron, rubbing slightly bloodshot eyes and throwing his fifth spoiled bit of parchment into the fire beside them. Listen, shall we just ask Hermione if we can have a look at what she's done? I mean, they're such bad students. Harry glanced over at her. She was sitting with Crookshanks on her lap and chatting merrily to Ginny as a pair of knitting needles flashed in midair in front of her, now knitting a pair of shapeless elf socks. No, he said heavily. You know she won't let us. And so they worked on while the sky outside the windows became steadily darker. Slowly, in the crowd of the common room, they began to thin again. At 11:30, Hermione wandered over to them, yawning. Nearly done? No, said Ron shortly. Well, Jupiter's biggest moon is Ganymede, not Callisto, she said, pointing over Ron's shoulder at his line in his astronomy essay. And it's Io that's got volcanoes. How do they know that? They're magicians. They didn't do a science.
Try to go for, like, a minute without my commentary comments, okay? Just try.
Thanks, snarled Ron, scratching out the offending sentences. Sorry, I only... Yeah, well, if you just come over here to criticize... Ron, I haven't got time to listen to a sermon, all right, Hermione? I'm up to my neck in it here. No, look. Hermione was pointing to the nearest window. Harry and Ron both looked over. A handsome screech owl was standing on the windowsill, gazing into the room at Ron. Isn't that Hermes? Said Hermione, sounding amazed. Blimey, it is, said Ron quietly, throwing down his quill and getting to his feet. What's Percy writing to me for? He crossed into the window and opened it. Hermes flew inside, landing on Ron's essay, and held out a leg to which the letter was attached. Ron took it off, and the owl departed at once, leaving inky footprints across Ron's drawing of the moon Io. It's definitely Percy's handwriting, said Ron, sinking back into his chair, staring at the words outside of the scroll. To Ronald Weasley, Gryffindor House, Hogwarts. He looked up at the other two. What do you reckon? Open it, said Hermione eagerly. Harry nodded. Ron unrolled the scroll and began to read. The farther down the parchment his eyes traveled, the more pronounced became his scowl. When he had finished reading, he looked disgusted. He thrust the letter at Harry and Hermione, who leaned toward each other to read it together. I need to get some water. So I'm going to take a short break. We're going to pause the recording here. Mm-hmm. And we're back.
Put that on your tummy so that we can put it up.
We can put it over there. Well, it can hear us.
Can it?
Yeah. It will hear us totally. Okay. Okay, so this is what the letter said. You ready, kitten? Dear Ron, I've only just heard from no less a person than the Minister of Magic himself, who has it that your new teacher, Professor Umbridge, that you have become a Hogwarts prefect. I'm most pleasantly surprised when I heard this news, and must first offer my congratulations. I must admit, I've always been afraid that you would take what we might call the Fred George route, rather than following in my footsteps. So you can imagine my feelings on hearing you've stopped flouting authority and decide to shoulder some real responsibility. But I wanted to give you more than congratulations. Ron, I want to give you some advice, which is why I'm sending this at night rather than the usual morning post. Hopefully you'll be able to read this away from prying eyes and avoid awkward questions. From something the minister let slip when telling me you are now a prefect, I gather that you are seeing a lot of Harry Potter. I must tell you, Ron, that nothing could put you in danger of losing your badge more than continued fraternization with that boy. Yes, I'm sure you're surprised to hear this. No doubt you will say that Potter has always been Dumbledore's favorite. But I feel bound to tell you that Dumbledore may not be in charge of Hogwarts much longer, and the people who count have a very different and probably more accurate view of Potter's behavior. I shall say no more, but if you look at the Daily Prophet tomorrow, you will get a good idea of the way the wind is blowing, and see if you can spot yours truly. Seriously, Ron, you do not want to be tarred with the same brush as Potter. It could be very damaging to your future prospects, and I'm talking here about life after school, too. As you must be aware, given that our father escorted him to court, Potter had a disciplinary hearing this summer in front of the whole Wizengamot, and he did not come out of it looking too good. He got off on a mere technicality, if you ask me, and many of the people I've spoken to remain convinced of his guilt. It may be that you are too afraid to sever ties with Potter. I know he can be unbalanced, and for all I know, violent. But if you have any worries about this, or have spotted anything else in Potter's behavior that is troubling you, I urge you to speak to Dolores Umbridge, a really delightful woman, who I know will be only too happy to advise you. This leads me to my other bit of advice. As I have hinted above, Dumbledore's regime at Hogwarts may soon be over. Your loyalty, Ron, should not be to him, but to the school and the ministry. I am very sorry to hear that so far Professor Umbridge is encountering very little cooperation from staff as she tries to make those necessary changes within Hogwarts that the Ministry so ardently desires. Although she should find this easier from next week. Again, see the Prophet tomorrow. I shall say this. A student who shows himself willing to help Professor Umbridge may now be very well placed for head boyship in a couple of years. I'm sorry that I was unable to see more of you over the summer. It pains me to criticize our parents, but I'm afraid I can no longer live under their roof while they remain mixed up with the dangerous crowd around Dumbledore. If you are writing to Mother at any point, you might tell her that a certain Sturgis Black, who is Sturgis Podmore, who is a great friend of Dumbledore's, has recently been sent to Azkaban for trespass at the Ministry. Perhaps that will open their eyes to the kind of petty criminals with whom they are currently rubbing shoulders. I count myself very lucky to escape the stigma of association with such people. The Minister could not be more gracious to me. And I do hope, Ron, that the nature of our parents' belief and actions either. Sorry, that you will not allow family ties to blind you to the misguided nature of our parents' belief and actions either. I sincerely hope that they, in time, will realize how mistaken they were. And I shall, of course, be ready to accept a full apology when that day comes. Please think over what I've said most carefully, particularly the bit about Harry Potter. And congratulations again on becoming prefect. Your brother, Percy.
Sure.
Harry looked at Ron. Well, he said, trying to sound as though he found the whole thing a joke. If you want to, what is it? He checked Percy's letter. Oh yeah, sever ties with me. I swear I won't get violent. Give it back, said Ron, holding out his hand. He is, Ron said jerkily, tearing Percy's letter in half. The world's, he tore into quarters, biggest, he tore into eighths, git. He threw the pieces into the fire. By the way, there's a version control system that's called git.
Uh-huh.
It was invented by the same guy that invented Linux.
Cute.
Linus Torvalds. He's really funny. He gave a talk at Google that is online that I watched a while ago, in which he disparages every other kind of version control out there. It's really funny.
Every other what?
Version control. That's the kind of thing, remember, where you save at different points of, yeah. Like, so that you can go back and see what you're writing. Anyways, he's very opinionated.
That's funny.
But it's clear that Git, which he wrote, is perfect for working on a project like Linux's, which is a large project with lots and lots of different files and tons of people contributing.
Right. So,
you're bored.
No.
You just want to read more, Harry.
Yeah.
You don't like me. You don't like when I talk about things that I like.
I do. Hey, guess what I found, by the way?
What did you find?
Bloomington. What? That I want to take you to.
What?
It's a place, it's like a coffee shop and a chess place.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. They have like chess boards and like you can play.
Oh. That's interesting. Yeah, I'll play. I haven't played chess in a long time.
I want to take you there.
Okay. Do you want to play chess with me?
Yeah. I'm really bad at it.
You could learn.
Yeah.
It's very fun. I haven't played in forever. We could play strip chess.
Ooh. Okay, keep reading.
Or we could just get naked and play chess.
Okay.
One of the two. You're very sexy.
Keep reading.
But you're sexy.
No, reading.
I like touching your naked body.
Nope, I'm not naked.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. Yeah. Do we have to go back, Jesse?
Come on, we've got to get this finished sometime before dawn, he said briskly to Harry, pulling Professor Sinistra's essay back toward him. I wonder if Professor Sinistra is left-handed. Hermione was looking at Ron with an odd expression on her face. Oh, give them here, she said abruptly. What? Give them to me, I'll look through them and correct them, she said. Are you serious? Oh, Hermione, you're a lifesaver, said Ron. What can I... What you can say is, we promise we'll never leave our homework this late again, she said, holding out both hands for the essay. That's what I say to you sometimes, don't I? But she looked slightly amused all the same. Thanks a million, Hermione, said Harry weakly, passing over his essay and sinking back into his armchair, rubbing his eyes. It was now past midnight, and the common room was deserted, but for the three of them in Crookshanks. The only sound was that of Hermione's quill scratching out sentences here and there, on their essays. and the ruffled pages as she checked various facts in the reference book strewn across the table. So, do they have to then rewrite their essays?
I don't know, but...
Keep Man, that sucks balls not to have a computer.
Yeah.
Harry was exhausted. He also felt an odd, sick, empty feeling in his stomach that had nothing to do with tiredness and everything to do with the letter, now curling blackly in the heart of the fire. He knew that half the people inside Hogwarts thought him strange, even mad. He knew that the Daily Prophet had been making snide allusions to him for months. But there was something about seeing it written down like that in Percy's writing, about knowing that Percy was advising Ron to drop him, and even to tell tales on him to Umbridge, that made his situation real to him, as nothing else had. He had known Percy for 4 years, had stayed in the house during summers, shared a tent with him during the Quidditch World Cup, had even awarded full marks by him in the second task of the Triwizard Tournament, and yet now, Percy thought him unbalanced and possibly violent. And with a surge of sympathy for his godfather, Harry thought that Sirius was probably the only person who knew he could really understand how he felt at the moment, because Sirius was in a similar situation. Nearly everyone in the wizarding world thought Sirius a dangerous murderer and a great Voldemort supporter, and he had had to live with that knowledge for 14 years. Harry blinked. He had just seen something in the fire that could not have been there. It had flashed into sight and vanished immediately. It could not have been. He imagined it because he'd been thinking about Sirius. Okay, write that down, Hermione said to Ron, pushing his essay and a sheet covered in her own writing back toward Ron, and then copy out this conclusion I've written for you. Hermione, you are honestly the most wonderful person I've ever met, said Ron weakly. If I'm ever rude to you again. I'll know you'll be back to normal, said Hermione. Harry, yours is okay, except for this bit at the end. I think you must have misheard Professor Sinistra. Europa's covered in ice, not mice, Harry. Oh, like he thought that a moon of Jupiter was covered in mice.
Well, they had volcanoes, you never know. Just keep reading.
They had volcanoes? That's mice? Doesn't make any sense. Harry slid off his chair onto his knees, and was now crouching on the singed and threadbare hearth rug, gazing into the flames. Harry, said Ron uncertainly, why are you down there? Because I've just seen Sirius's head in the fire, said Harry. He spoke calmly. After all, he'd seen Sirius's head in the very fire the previous year and talked to him. Nevertheless, he could not be quite sure that he had really seen it this time. It had vanished so quickly. Sirius's head, Hermione repeated. You mean like when he wanted to talk to you during the Triwizard Tournament? But he wouldn't do that now. It would be too... Sirius! She gasped, gasing at the fire. You okay, Bill?
Yeah.
Why are you tapping me?
Keep breathing.
I'm breathing! Ron dropped his quill. There, in the middle of the dancing flames, sat Sirius's head, long dark hair flailing about his grinning face. I was starting to think you'd go to bed before everyone else had disappeared. I've been checking every hour. You've been popping into the fire every hour, Harry said, half laughing. Just for a few seconds to see if the coast was clear yet. What have you been seeing? Said Hermione anxiously. Well, I think a girl, first year by the look of her, might have gotten a glimpse of me earlier, but don't worry, said Sirius hastily, as Hermione clapped her hand to her mouth. I was gone the moment she looked back at me, and I'll bet she just thought I was an ugly-shaped log or something. But Sirius, this is taking an awful risk, said Hermione. You sound like Molly, said Sirius. This was the only way I could come up with of answering Harry's letter without resorting to code, when codes are breakable. Not if you use actual encryption as opposed to just silly codes.
Mm-hmm.
If they had computers.
Mm-hmm.
At the mention of Harry's letter, Hermione and Ron turned to stare at him. You didn't say you'd written to Sirius, said Hermione accusingly. I forgot, said Harry, which was perfectly true. His meeting with Cho in the Owry had driven everything else before it out of his mind. Don't look at me like that, Hermione. There was no way of anyone who would have gotten the secret information out of it, was there, Sirius? It's like I'm trying to turn with only one hand.
You can have it.
No, I think it's perfectly good the way it, the space, the place that it is.
Would you like help?
I got it. No, it was just very good. It was very good, said Sirius, smiling. Anyway, we better be quick, just in case we're disturbed. Your scar. What about? Ron began, but Hermione said quickly. We'll tell you afterwards. Go on, Sirius. Well, I know it can't be fun when it hurts. We don't think it's anything to worry about. It kept aching all last year, didn't it? Yeah, and Dumbledore said it happened whenever Voldemort was feeling a powerful emotion, said Harry, ignoring, as usual, Ron and Hermione's wincing. So maybe he just, I don't know, was really angry or something the night I had that detention. Well, now that he's back, it's bound to hurt more often, said Sirius. You don't think it had anything to do with Umbridge touching me when I was in detention, said Harry. I doubt it, said Sirius. I know her by reputation, and I'm sure that she's no Death Eater. Yeah, but the world doesn't split into good people and Death Eaters, said Sirius. Oh, sorry. She's foul enough to be one, said Harry darkly, and Ron and Hermione nodded in vigorous agreement. Yes, but the world isn't split into good people and Death Eaters, said Sirius with a wry smile. I know she's a nasty piece of work, though. You should hear Remus talk about her. Does Lupin know her? Said Harry quickly, remembering Umbridge's comment about dangerous half-breeds during her first lesson. No, said Sirius, but she drafted a bit of anti-werewolf legislation 2 years ago that made it almost impossible for him to get a job. Harry remembered how much shabbier Lupin had looked these days, and his dislike of Umbridge deepened even further. What's she got against them? Said Hermione angrily. Scared of them, I expect, said Sirius, smiling at her indignation. Apparently she loathes part humans. She campaigned to have mare people rounded up and tagged last year. Imagine wasting your time and energy persecuting mare people when there are little toe rags like creature on the loose. You know, by the way, isn't that like... I mean, like, what kind of world do they live in exactly?
Yeah, that's what she's making it out to be, that there are people kind of like the, like, in our world where, like, genocide and shit.
But we don't have people like that in our country. I mean,
yes, we do.
We have people like that, but no one in power.
Well, that's true. But there were people in power.
Well, I know. Like, 50 years ago, there were.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that's...
But that's what I'm saying. So they're like, back in the old days.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy.
Yep.
Ron laughed, but Hermione looked upset. Sirius, she said reproachfully. Honestly, if you made a bit of an effort with the creature, I'm sure he'd respond. After all, you're only the only member of his family he's got left. And Professor Dumbledore said... So what are Umbridge's lessons like? Sirius interrupted. Is she training you to kill all half-breeds? No, said Harry, ignoring Hermione's affronted look at being cut off in her defense at creature. She's not letting us use magic at all. All we do is read the stupid textbook, said Ron. Oh, that figures, said Sirius. Our information from inside the Ministry is that Fudge doesn't want you trained in combat. Trained in combat, repeated Harry incredulously. What does he think we're doing, forming some kind of wizard army? That's exactly what he thinks you're doing, said Sirius. Or rather, that is exactly what he's afraid Dumbledore is doing, forming his own private army, with which he'll be able to take on the Ministry of Magic. There was a pause at this, and then Ron said, That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, including all the stuff that Luna Lovegood's comes out with. Mm-hmm. So we're being prevented from learning defense against the dark arts because Fudge is scared we'll use spells against the Ministry, said Hermione, looking furious. Yep, said Sirius. Fudge thinks Dumbledore will stop at nothing to seize power. He's getting more paranoid about Dumbledore by the day. It's a matter of time before he has Dumbledore arrested on some trumped-up charge. This reminded Harry of Percy's letter. Do you know if there's anything will be in the Daily Prophet about Dumbledore tomorrow? Only Ron's brother Percy reckons there will be. I don't know, said Sirius. I haven't seen anyone from the Order all weekend. And they're all busy. It's just been Creature and me here. There was a definite note of bitterness in Sirius's voice. So you haven't had any news about Hagrid either? Said Sirius. Well, he was supposed to be back by now. No one's quite sure what's happened to him. And then, seeing their stricken faces, he added quickly, But Dumbledore's not worried, so don't you three get yourself in a state. I'm sure Hagrid's fine. But if he was supposed to be back by now, said Hermione in a small, worried voice. Madame Maxime was with him. We've been in touch with her, and she says they got separated on their journey home. But there's nothing to suggest he's hurt. Nothing to suggest he's not perfectly okay. Unconvinced, Ron, Harry, and Hermione exchanged worried looks. Listen, don't go asking too many questions about Hagrid, said Sirius hastily. It'll just draw even more attention to the fact he's not back. And I know Dumbledore doesn't want that. Hagrid's tough. He'll be okay. And when they did not appear cheered by this, Sirius added, When's your next Hogsmeade's visit, anyway? I was thinking, we got away with the dog disguise at the station, didn't we? I thought we could. No, said Harry and Hermione together very loudly. Sirius, didn't you see the Daily Prophet? Said Hermione anxiously. Oh, that, said Sirius, grinning. They're always guessing where I am. They really haven't got a clue. Yes, but we think this time they have, said Harry. Something Malfoy said on the train made us think that he knew it was you, and his father was on the platform, Sirius. You know Lucius Malfoy, so don't come up again. Whatever you do, if Malfoy recognizes you again. All right, I've got the point, said Sirius. He looked most displeased. Just an idea, I thought you might like to get together. I would, I just don't want you chucked back in Azkaban, said Harry. There was a pause in which Sirius looked out of the fire at Harry, a crease between his sunken eyes. You're less like your father than I thought, he said, finally, a definite coolness in his voice. The risk would have been made it fun for James. Look. Well, I better get going. I can hear a creature coming down the stairs, said Sirius. But Harry was sure he was lying. I'll write you a time I can make it back into the fire, shall I? If you can stand to risk it. There was a tiny pop, and the place where Sirius's head had been, there was a flickering flame once more. And that's the end of chapter 14. And next is chapter 15, called The Hogwarts High Inquisitor.
I really like that kitten. You're a very adorable kitten, boo. I love you so much. And you're very sweet. And now it's bedtime for you.
Bedtime for sweet kitten boos.
I'll tuck you in. You're a very sweet kitty.
You're my sweetest puppy.
You're my sweetest kitty. Love you so much. You're my sweet kitty.
Good night, sweetheart. I love you so much.